All right, good morning. Hey, let me ask you guys a question. Okay, all right, let's clap it up. Here we go. It is a good morning. Awesome. Man, okay, this is going to be fun. Let me ask you guys a question, okay? Have you ever been hungry for something that didn't actually satisfy you? Have you ever, you know, desired something or wanted something so bad, but it didn't matter what you tried or what you gained or what you pursued, it left you wanting, like it wasn't enough. Let me give you some examples, okay? So my wife and I, we've recently become emotionally invested in a series on Netflix. I don't know if anybody's in the same boat with me. Okay, good. Because here's what happens. Right now, it's a ritual at our house. Once we put the kids to bed and we force ourselves to have an adult conversation in our house, then we go mindlessly enter into Netflix. And so what will happen almost every time, we'll watch one episode, and I will ask the same question at the end of every episode. Do you want to watch one more? Right? Because one episode is not enough. If anything, it makes you hungry for more. And so it makes you want more of these things. Right now, my wife is pregnant, which is pretty awesome. But with pregnancy, yes, man. Okay, bring it. Thank you. I will take full credit. Never mind. Okay. You guys are making this worse already. Anyways, she's pregnant. And with pregnancy comes cravings. And so there's a specific meal that has to meet this craving. Otherwise, she'll go searching our city for a meal that's going to meet this craving. Here's what's interesting, though. Once she eats that meal, it no longer works. And so it kind of stinks for me because I'm like, I hear about this craving she has. And as a good husband, I'm thinking I could surprise her and I could show up at the door with this meal that's going to satisfy this craving that she has, only to find out she no longer craves it. Or worse, what she used to crave now makes her sick. And so I used to think that would give me points, but now it just cost me. You know what I mean? So it's one of those things that's like, man, there was that hunger, but now it's no longer being able to be satisfied. One more thing, and then I'll tell you why I'm bringing this up. I love sweet tea, but I cannot drink one cup of sweet tea. I don't know if anybody else is like this, but it seems like by drinking a cup of sweet tea, I now want another cup of sweet tea. It didn't actually like quench my thirst. If anything, it made me more thirsty. And so then I enter into this vicious cycle of, I want another glass of tea, and then I drink it, and it makes me more thirsty. But the more I drink of it, the worse I end up feeling. And here's the point in all this. Listen, we all have appetites within us. And I'm not just talking about hunger and thirst for food and drink. I'm saying, you know, desire, appetite, craving, these things were created within all of us. And these cravings drive us to search out the thing that can satisfy us, drives us to pursue the thing to bank our lives on, the thing to depend our lives on. And when we don't find that, when these appetites, these desires, these cravings we have, when these things aren't met, we can live in a state of being restless. We can live in a state of experiencing discontent in this life. And that's what we're talking about. This danger of experiencing and embracing a life of discontent. And here's a simple way to look at it, okay? One way to look at it is, you know, your appetite, when it is greater than the source, is always going to lead to and produce discontent. Okay, so the appetite. I am hungry. The source. A cheeseburger, because everybody knows one cheeseburger doesn't satisfy an appetite, right? Or maybe that's just me. So the appetite, when it's greater than the source, it's always going to produce discontent. But the reverse is true as well. When the source is actually greater than the appetite, when you've got that all-you-can-eat buffet, it will satisfy this appetite, which means it'll lead to a life that is content. And so let me bring it to us again. If you're here and you've ever had this thought, is this really all there is? Is this really all that life has to offer me? Because maybe you're experiencing this sort of restlessness. If you're living in this continual unmet desire, that is, your appetites seem to always be greater than the things you're pursuing, than the sources you're going to, than the things you're depending on, The temptation is, and the tendency for a lot of us is, that when we experience this restlessness, sometimes we just buy into this idea that I just need to embrace discontent. But here's the sad reality about embracing a life that is discontent. At its very best, listen to me, at its very best, it simply produces a life that is fine. Not one that's good, not one that's great, a life that is just simply, well, it's fine. And it means that we're settling for something less than what is actually available to us. Because how mean would it be if God gave us desires in this world, but yet these desires cannot be met? That would just be incredibly mean. It's almost as if you're like living and you've just discovered that you have this illness in your life, this sickness in your life. But instead of going to a doctor, instead of getting treated for this illness, you kind of make up in your mind and convince yourself, maybe this is now my new normal. Feeling restless, feeling sick, feeling like something is missing is my new normal. You've just embraced discontent. You've embraced this way of thinking. But so the best case scenario, listen, it produces a life that is just fine. But listen to me, at its worst, embracing discontent will wreck you. And I feel like if it feels like sometimes something's constantly eating away at your soul daily, and these unmet desires will drive us to extremes, because many of us have been in those places. That didn't work, so let me try this now. That didn't work, now let me try this. Oh, that much didn't work, let me try more. That didn't work, let me go after it more. And so it drives us to extremes that cannot satisfy us, and they will ultimately destroy us. And so, like, I get some of us in the room might be thinking, okay, Harrison, you know, take it down a notch. You sound a little dramatic here. But for the rest of us who have been through seasons of restlessness, where it seems like this life of discontent is grating against us, here's the reality. Scripture can be incredibly helpful for us. It gives us incredible insight as to two really important questions for us. So we're going to look at two passages today, and they're going to address, each one are going to address different questions. So one passage is going to address, why do we even deal with this? Why do we have this feeling? Why do we struggle with this idea of discontent? The second question is going to be, okay, how do we get past that? How do we then become content in this life? So first question, you ready? Why do we struggle with being discontent? Why is this even something that we have to deal with? Why is it something that exists? And so in your Bible, we're going to look at Jeremiah chapter 2, verse 11. If you don't know where that is, or you can't get there, we're going to put it up here on the screen. But let me just kind of enter into this and show you guys kind of where I think this comes from, because I think this passage is an amazing picture of where discontent really begins. Verse 11, we're going to start halfway through. Here's what it says. But my people, this is God speaking to the prophet Jeremiah, my people have changed their glory for that which does not profit. So why do we struggle with being discontent? Because somewhere along the way, the people of God, and many of us can throw ourselves into this group as well, we have exchanged something very valuable for something else that does not profit. For something else that is not measuring up. It is not working for us. It is not satisfying us. And so on one side, he says, man, we have exchanged this thing for something that does not work. Verse 12, look at this. He says, be appalled. Oh, heavens, be appalled at this. Be shocked. Be utterly desolate, declares the Lord. What is he saying? He's calling the heavens together. And he's saying, guys, look at how crazy this is. That my people have abandoned the one thing that did actually satisfy them, that did fulfill them, that did bring them rest, that did bring them peace. My people have given that up for something that does not work, for food that does not meet their hunger, for a drink that does not quench their thirst. How crazy is it that that has happened? He's saying, this is absurd. This doesn't make sense to me. Then he goes down to 13. Look at this. He says, for my people, they've committed two evils. Here's the first. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters. He's saying they've forsaken me. What did the people exchange? What did they give up for something else? The fountain of living waters. They removed themselves from the very source of life, the very source of sustenance and strength. Then what did they do? Here's the second evil that the people committed. They hewed out cisterns for themselves. So not only did they reject God as the source, but then they go out and then they go build their own cisterns, meaning they built a source that they now have control over. So that when they drink from their own cisterns, now they can say, look what we did. Look, they can get all the credit now. Look how I provided for all these things. Look at how I have done these things for my family. Look how I have done these things and provided. And here's the irony about cisterns. Cisterns are not actually a source. They're a container of some kind that has to be filled by something else. It has to rain for the cistern to be filled up. It has to receive water flowing down from a mountain in order for it to be filled up. And so even if you build your own cistern, you are still dependent on the rain, or you're still dependent on something else to fill it. So when the rain came, and when they would drink from their own cistern, they were only deceiving themselves as to what was satisfying their thirst. They think it was the cistern they built, and it's not. They're believing something else. And so when we read this story, when we look at what these people are doing, we look at them and we go, you're crazy. Why would you remove yourself from the fountain of living water and build cisterns in a desert dependent on rain? It doesn't make sense. But when we build our own cisterns and when we stop trusting God, all of a sudden we have a lot more excuses as to why. We look at them and we think, man, you're crazy. But when we do it, we have excuses and reasons for giving up on God. You know, there's a story about Jesus in the New Testament in John chapter 4. And I love this story because it's where Jesus meets a woman who's stopped trusting the fountain of living water and has started building her own cisterns. Here's what happens. One day, Jesus and his disciples, they're traveling through Samaria, which is already kind of weird in the story because most Jewish people avoided Samaria altogether when they're traveling from Galilee down to any of the regions below Samaria. So the fact that Jesus and the disciples went through Samaria is kind of interesting. But in the middle of the day, Jesus finds himself sitting at a well, and a woman from the city comes out. And he notices this because here's a woman isolated by herself, coming out in the middle of the day, because most women in that culture would come out early morning. They'd come out together. They'd all get water together because it was cooler. Then the sun hadn't come out. The day wasn't very hot yet. But here's a woman completely isolated, doing a task at a time of day that didn't make sense. And so Jesus naturally kind of strikes up a conversation. And he asks her, can you give me a drink of water? Now, again, this is interesting because here's a Jewish man, most likely a rabbi, she can tell, asking a Samaritan woman if she can help provide a drink for him. These paths don't cross. You don't have these kind of conversations. And so she's kind of shocked by this. But they get a conversation going. They start chatting it up a little bit. But then Jesus takes the conversation to a deeper level. And here's what he says. Look at this. He says, everyone who drinks this water, you know, they're at a well. She says, hey, if you drink this water, you're going to be thirsty again. But whoever drinks the water that I will give him will never be thirsty again. He wants her to know that, hey, I can actually give you, I can provide the source of living water. And let me just ask you, if somebody actually said to you, hey, listen, I can give you that restlessness within you, that thirst within you for something, I can show you where it is. I can lead you to that place. You can experience what it is to be satisfied and filled up. Wouldn't you be excited about that? Because she is. She's saying, man, show me this water. Lead me to this water. Show me how to get it because I'm tired of dragging my bucket out here in the middle of the day. I'm tired of being isolated from my community. I'm tired of drinking water that makes me thirsty, drinking water that never satisfies. She says, where is it? How do I get there? He says, I will give you the water. I can lead you to this water. But first, I need you to go get your husband. And all of a sudden in the story, she puts her walls back up. You know the story? All of a sudden, she puts her guard back up. Because Jesus just got personal. And if you were like me and this woman, When Jesus gets personal, all of a sudden we tend to go to defense mode. All of a sudden you're getting personal. Oh, okay. Me and you, you know, we're going to stiff arm this relationship real quick. She says, I don't have a husband. And sympathetically, he looks her in the eye and he says, I know. I know, because this is the guy you're with right now is the fifth attempt at being satisfied, and it's not working. This is the fifth attempt at finding something that is going to meet your needs, and it's not working. This is your fifth attempt at quenching this thirst in your soul, and it's not working. What did Jesus just do? You see, he wants her to know living water is available. And when you drink living water, that is water that keeps coming, water that has no end, that water, it is more than enough. You can't find the end of it. You can't drink more of it. You can always have more. Every day you wake up, every time a day you want, there's more and more living water that's coming and available. And he says, you can drink of this and you won't need to search anymore for something to quench your thirst. But you can't have living water until you get rid of your cisterns. You can't enjoy it. You're not going to come to the fountain of living water if you're depending on these cisterns in your life, these cisterns that keep making grand promises to you that are always empty. It's near impossible to receive living water. You have to let go of your cisterns first. See, for this woman, these guys were her cisterns. And when one guy, she would put her hope in him, and she was going to hope that he would give her the love she needed, give her the respect, give her the identity, give her hope, give her security. All these things she was hoping in, and that didn't work. So what'd she do? She built another cistern. And when that cistern didn't work, when that guy didn't work, she built another cistern. You see, that's what he's calling out. You see, these cisterns are only really good at doing one thing, making promises, not necessarily keeping them. Promises like, well, maybe the next relationship will give you what you really need. Maybe the next promotion will actually give you and your family the security and margin that you think you need, and you think you'll be comfortable then. You'll think you'll be at rest then. Maybe you should just wait till after college before you start taking this faith thing seriously, taking this life thing seriously, because you think maybe I could just live it up now, but then I'll make a difference. Maybe one day, and maybe if I, and maybe when we, and all these things. You can fill in the blank, and I can guarantee you there's a cistern that's going to make a promise to you, a promise that says, I can meet your thirst. I can make you content. But this is the reason why, okay? We're going to look back at the passage with Jeremiah. This is why we keep struggling with embracing discontent. God says, my people, they've committed two evils. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living water, and they've hewed out cisterns for themselves. But this is what you need to know about these cisterns. They are broken cisterns that can hold no water. They're broken. We keep believing lies about these cisterns and what they can do, and then when it doesn't work, we duct tape them back together, hoping that this time we could drink deep of living water that's always going to come, always going to be available to us, and it leaves us wanting. In this whole passage, God has this tone of like anger and urgency, not just because people have traded him for broken cisterns, which would make anybody mad. But because now his people are banking their lives on something that is not going to sustain them. Listen to me. His people are going to thirst to death by building their own cisterns. They're digging their own graves. And like any good father, he is deeply concerned and even enraged at the fact that why would his people embrace the very thing that is going to destroy them? Yes, he's frustrated. Yes, he's concerned. This is why embracing discontent is so dangerous. This is why it can wreck you. This is why it can mess up your life. And so let us now be like the woman in the story, okay? Let us be the woman who goes, where do we get this water? How can we now become content? How can we begin to experience a life that is full and filled up and satisfied? Here's the good news. There's a guy in the New Testament named Paul who said, I figured it out. And thank goodness he also wrote it down. So now we know how we can become content as well. And so in Philippians 4, that's where we're going to camp out for the next little minute. We're going to start in verse 11. Again, halfway through this verse, look at what he says. For I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content. Think about that. I've learned it doesn't matter what happens in this life. It doesn't matter where I'm going. It doesn't matter what I'm experiencing. I have learned to be content. The Philippian church just sent Paul a gift to bless him and to help him with his need, to help pay for groceries. Okay? They just sent him a gift. And Paul says, thank you, thank you, thank you. But I need you to know I don't need you. I don't need your gift. I don't need you to show up. I'm not dependent on you. He says, I have learned to be content. And here's what that word means. Sufficient in oneself. Self-sufficient, adequate, independent of need from anybody else, needing no assistance from anybody else. He has now learned to stand on his own two feet regardless of what life throws at him. So at the very least, here's what this happens. Here's what this does for us. At least we know it's possible to live with contentment. At least we know that life is available to us because he's showing us that it's possible. He goes on in verse 12. I know how to be brought low. And that's the word humble. I know how to, in this, you can look at it two ways. I know how to humble myself, like I'm going to fast from these things because I don't need them to prove to myself, to prove to God that he's more important. I know how to humble myself and I know how to deal with life when it humbles me. When it brings me low. So he says, I know how to be brought low and I know how to abound. Listen, being content when life is abounding might actually be more difficult than being content when life is at its lows. Think about that. He knows how to be brought low. He knows how to abound in any and every circumstance. I have learned, here it is, the secret. He's learned the secret to facing plenty and facing hunger, facing abundance and need. He's saying, I've been on both sides of these things. I know what it's like not to have to worry if I'm going to be able to pay for food for this next week. I know what it's like to not worry about, am I going to pay the utility bill? Am I going to make this payment? Are we going to make it through? Are the kids going to be okay? I know what it's like to do that. I know what it's like to walk into a room and people want my attention because by having a relationship with me, for some reason, they feel like they gain something significant. I know what it's like to live in a season of abundance and things are high and things are abounding. And I know what it's like to experience the other side. I know what it's like to be brought low. Keep in mind, when he's writing these words, he's writing from a prison cell in Rome. He knows what it's like to be brought low. He knows what it's like to be in desperate need. He's been persecuted before. He's been beaten close to death. He even spent a night and an entire day floating out to sea because his ship got wrecked. How terrifying would that be, by the way? I'm just thinking about that. Like, he knows what it's like when life gives him the worst hand to be dealt. He can live through that. And he says, I've learned the secret to being content in all of this. And the phrase, learned the secret, here's what that means. He's gone through the initiation. He's been initiated into some mystery. He's been initiated into some special society, some special group of people. Life has thrown all these things at him, and he's gone through the initiation and discovered the secret to being content, being independent of need, being self-sufficient. So what is the secret? Here we go. I can do all things. Now, the next five words change everything. Because if you miss the next five words, you don't understand the secret to being content. You don't understand the way in which Paul lives this independent, self-sufficient, I'm going to stand on my own two feet kind of life. If you miss the next five words, you miss everything. Okay, so hey, here we go. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. Through him who strengthens. Think about this. This is like irony upon irony. I can do all things. I can be self-sufficient. I can stand on my own two feet because I'm dependent on him. Because I'm depending on the source I'm depending on the one to fill me and sustain me. His big secret to living fully satisfied and being independent is depending on God. Listen, this is one of those verses that, by and large, is one of the most misused verses in the Bible, right? You know, you got football players and athletes all over the place going, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Let me just say this, firsthand experience. I can pray this verse 1,000 times. I can even shout it with like tears in my eyes, and I will not be able to dunk a 10-foot basketball goal. I've tried it, and I've been disappointed. And it just doesn't work because, listen, it's not going to happen today for me. Every passage we read, you have to read in context. What is the context of this verse? He is saying that he has learned to be content in life, filled with ups and downs. So a better way to use this verse, a better way to understand this is when I charge that goal, when I take that leap of faith, and when I make a straight up fool of myself trying to do something I cannot do, that's when I quote this verse. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, because he has given me the strength to work through my disappointment. That's when you know he gives you the strength to work through your failures, work through your brokenness, as well as working through your success, working through your victories, working through the wins in life. It's interesting. His claim has been, I've mastered how to be independent and self-sufficient. And here's what he says. My independence is fueled by full dependence on God. That's the secret to living a life that is content, that you have to drink from the source. You can't keep running to cisterns. He understood what Jeremiah was talking about. He realized our world is filled with broken cisterns. He understood that these cisterns of our world, they might feed you once, but you'll get hungry again. They might quench your thirst once, but you'll get thirsty again. And broken cisterns always run dry. There will always be an end to it. It will never hold enough water for you. It will never provide enough for you. Do you want to know why? Here's every one of us is included in the statement I'm about to make. We all were created in the image of God, which means your soul hungers and thirsts for things of eternity. That means that nothing in our world, no temporary means, can satisfy an appetite for the eternal. That's why Jesus is the unending, eternal source for us that can satisfy this eternal desire within us. He's the only one, because you were created with a desire for the eternal, and anything less than that will leave you wanting. Every one of us will be restless until we find him, until we drink and eat full of who he is. And so let's talk about how do we do that very specifically. How do we become content then? What do I do now? And I got two things for you, okay? First off, let's become an expert at exposing cisterns. Become an expert at exposing cisterns. You have to learn how to call out things that are promising you that which it can't deliver on, that are promising you things that it's never going to fulfill. And I would encourage you, do this with a friend that's kind of really sarcastic, because they will really help you out here. But find somebody to do life with that you could just go, whoa, 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 that's a cistern. Man, you are running in the wrong direction. And so here's how you do this. There are two things, questions for you. One question, is this pointing to Jesus or away from him? Is this pointing to the source or pulling you away from the source? And here's what I mean. A lot of times we get in relationships where he or she has said, I'm a Christian, I love God, I love going after him, I love those things. Usually saying those things just to get you in a relationship with them. But it seems like the deeper you get in a relationship with them, the further you get from a relationship with Jesus. Heads up, that's a cistern. And it's a broken one. It's one that's going to run dry on you. It's going to leave you wanting. And just like this woman, you'll build yourself another cistern. Listen, we've got to become experts at calling out these cisterns. So you have to ask, is this pulling me towards the source? Is this pointing me towards the source? Or is it building walls and barricading me and pulling me away from him? Here's the second question that I think is really helpful. Is it actually satisfying? Be honest with yourself. Is it actually working? This thing you've been depending on, this thing you've been running after, the thing, when you finally have it, when you finally reach that pay grade, when you finally get to these places, does it actually work? Does it actually give you more rest? Here, and I'll give you a quick example. Every meal I sit at, my tongue tells me, you really want that. And as soon as I eat it, my stomach tells me, you're an idiot. You know why? Because my tongue is lying to me. My tongue is telling me, you really want these things. You really want hot wings. And my stomach is saying, if you put that in me, I'm going to fight you the rest of this day. You know what I mean? It's just, so the question is this working? The appetite that you have and the things that you're trying to quench that thirst with, are they actually working? Are they producing peace? Are they producing rest? Are you more content? And if you're not, chances are, you've been banking on a cistern that's about to run dry. So, become an expert at exposing cisterns. Here's the second thing. Become a student of the source. Become a student of the source. And here's what I mean by this. You've got to do things that enable you to know him more. You've got to do things that point you to and draw you closer to him as the source. And simple things like start spending more time with him. Every relationship you are in needs time if it's going to work. Every relationship requires investing in time. And it's the same thing with the source. If you want to know God better, if you want to know the source better, and you want to gain from him the living water that is available in him, you have to spend more time with him. And so ask yourself, where have I felt closest to God? What seasons of my life have I felt like I knew him the best? What seasons of my life did I feel like I was furthest from him? And then go, why did I feel those things? If you're the kind of person that feels closest to God when you are outside, then put your phone away and go outside and walk around a lake, right? Do the things. They're going to put you in the place where you can finally know him, where you can get to experience him better. Do those things that enable you to spend more time. Here's the second thing. If stuff is distracting you, if stuff tends to build more walls between you and the source instead of pointing you to the source, I want to challenge you. Commit to live simply. That one's hard. Because again, it might be more difficult for those of us who are experiencing an abundance in life. It might actually be more difficult for us to experience contentment. Because it's like that sweet tea. The more you drink, the more thirsty you become. And the more things get in between you and the source of living water. And so choose to live simply. Doesn't it make sense to say no to the things that keep you from saying yes to the greatest hope of satisfaction? That makes sense. To say no to some things so that when you say yes to God, you experience and drink in and are satisfied with him. You see, your contentment is directly related to your pursuit of God. That's a reality. That's what Jeremiah said. That's what Paul is saying. John Piper's one of these guys who I've heard say it recently. He said to be that part of the reason we find ourselves experiencing discontent is because we've lost our hunger and thirst for God. And the reality is when we hunger and thirst and pursue and desire God more and more and more, that is when we find ourselves most content in this life, here, now. It is available to us. So let me kind of wrap up here in a minute. I have one passage that has just been sticking on my mind for the last several weeks. It comes from Exodus 20. I can't get past Moses' example. All right, and I'm hoping that all of us, as we leave here today, feel like we can walk more like Moses than the other people in this story. Because here's what's happening in Exodus 20. You know, the people of God have been living 400 years in Egyptian captivity. And so their thinking is very Egyptian. Their thinking is very slave-like. Their thinking is very, I've held captive, I'm the victim, I'm all these things. Okay, that's their thinking for 400 years. And so God, in His grace, provides 10 guardrails that enable His people to finally live a life that is life-giving. And He gives the 10 commandments. He says, if you do these things, that's how you experience more life. And then in this season, He says, now, Moses, go tell your people, come meet me at the mountain. Come find me. Not only am I giving you these guardrails, but I'm giving you an opportunity to experience me. And so Moses goes to the people and says, hey guys, in a few days, we're going to go to the mountain and God is going to be there. And He's invited us to come. And so when the people look at the mountain, they are terrified. Because when they look at the mountain, they see this dark cloud. And they see lightning. They hear the thunder. It looks like the mountain itself is going to explode because the presence of God is on the mountain. And all of a sudden it's trembling because it can barely hold itself together because of God. And God has said, come meet me here. And you know what the people do? They say, you know what? Moses, why don't you go meet God? And then just tell us what He says. They say, Moses, you go talk to Him, and whatever He says, we're good with. You know, whatever He says, we're going to do. But we're good with our relationship. We're content in our pursuit of God, meaning we don't want any more. And do you know what that produces? A life that is discontent. As soon as you are content in your pursuit of God, it will produce a life that leads to more and more discontent. And that's what the people did. So look at this verse. It says, the people, it was their time. The people stood far off. I'm good right here in our relationship. I don't want any more of what you have to offer. I'm good. I'm going to stand right here in this place. I'm going to just do this thing. They stood far off. While Moses, oh my goodness, let us be like Moses. Moses drew near, never satisfied in his relationship with God, never content in his pursuit of God. By the end of his life, he's saying, I want more. I want more of this. God, I need you more. I need more of your glory. I want to see you on a mountain. He was even asking God to do things, and God's saying, listen, if you do that, it could kill you. And he says, I don't care. I want more of you. I need to know you more. And being wholly discontent in his pursuit of God produced what? A life that is content. And here's what's amazing. Moses, he drew near to God, and he drew near to the thick darkness. I think that's amazing. He drew near the thick darkness where God was, because sometimes you find God in thick darkness. Sometimes you find God in your pain. Sometimes you find God in your lowest lows. But if that's where He is, then we should go. Sometimes God is waiting for you on the other side of your pain, and you have to enter into the darkness to get there. But if you get God, isn't it worth it? If you know Him more, wouldn't it be worth it? You see, so many of us are like the people where we stand far off and we go, I'm okay. But then we ask ourselves questions, why do I continue to feel this way? Why do I continue to feel restless? But if we become like Moses, drawing near to the thick darkness, if that's where God is, all of a sudden it produces in us eternal rest, eternal satisfaction, eternal contentment. You see, listen, pursuing God may not always be the easiest thing, but it is always going to be the best thing for us. So let me pray and let's become like Moses. Father, thank you for your grace. Thank you for the opportunity to know you. Thank you that we get to hear these stories of people in Scripture. Stories that are calling us out because we're the kind of people prone to build cisterns instead of depending on the source. And so we want to even confess that today. I'm sorry. All of us in this room, if we were hit by that today, that we're the kind of people who build cisterns, collectively we confess, Lord, we're sorry. We're sorry that we have forsaken you the fountain of living water, and we've built these cisterns that are broken and don't satisfy us. They leave us wanting, but the promises that they bring keep distracting us from you. So we're sorry that we haven't seen that. And help us to take a step today that gets us past it, because we don't want to embrace a discontent life. One that can only be fine, settling for something, or worse, something that wrecks us. We want to be the kind of people who know you and are not satisfied in knowing you, but we can drink more and more and more, and we want to go after you more and more and more, just like Moses did. So help us to do that, we pray in the name of Jesus. Amen.